Imagine this scenario. You are working as a second-year resident in the emergency department when you see H.U., a 63-year-old woman who has just arrived in the emergency department with abdominal pain. The patient reports a 2-month history of a nagging left lower quadrant pain, now associated with nausea, bloating, and constipation. Looking at her charts, you see that 8 years ago, she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and she has the BRCA1, or BRCA1, gene mutation. Your initial impression is a gastrointestinal source of pain, but during the pelvic exam, you feel an approximately 6 cm mass on the left ovary. What is the next step in your evaluation? How do you take into account her genetic history? And welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Yoon Weisholt, here to bring reproductive biology from our bricks to your ears. After our episode today, you will be able to 1. Describe how the most common types of ovarian tumors present. 2. List and classify the various types of ovarian tumors. 3. Compare and contrast the clinical pathologic features of the major types of ovarian tumors. And 4. Describe the diagnosis and treatment of ovarian tumors, including the use of tumor markers. Part 1. What is an ovarian neoplasm? The ovaries are a pair of reproductive organs located deep in the pelvis of the female body. They contain the female gametes, the ova. As in many other organs, cancerous and benign tumors, or neoplasms, can arise there, but most are malignant. Such tumors are distinct from ovarian cysts, although some ovarian neoplasms may have cystic features. Ovarian tumors can originate from many of the cell types found in the ovaries, and the cell of origin has a significant effect on how the tumor behaves. To help us put this into perspective, up to 8% of women will present with ovarian masses in their lifetime. In malignant form, ovarian tumors are a deadly form of cancer, the most common cause of cancer death from gynecologic malignancy in the United States. Part 2. How do ovarian tumors present? Ovarian tumors can be difficult to detect clinically, which is what makes them challenging to diagnose early on. Often, they are asymptomatic and are detected during a routine pelvic exam or radiologic studies performed for other reasons. The location of the ovaries determines the most common symptoms, when symptoms are present. Because the ovaries are located in the pelvis and lower abdomen, women with ovarian masses often describe gastrointestinal symptoms like constipation, abdominal or pelvic pain, and bloating. As you probably noted, these symptoms are common to a number of disorders, so there really isn't a clinical presentation specific to ovarian cancer. This also means that when a woman presents with gastrointestinal complaints, it is important to include gynecologic causes in your differential diagnosis. Some ovarian tumors are able to secrete hormones that cause symptoms that may point towards a diagnosis. Most of these are malignant tumors, but a couple of types, like fibromas and teratomas, are benign. Ovarian cancer spreads by direct extension in the pelvis and throughout the peritoneum. Because the symptoms of this early direct extension can be minimal and nonspecific, ovarian cancer is not typically diagnosed until it has spread well beyond the pelvis. At diagnosis, there may be metastases in the structures of the peritoneal cavity, such as the GI tract and liver, and even distant spread into the pleural cavity. It also spreads via lymphatic invasion. Let's go back to what you may remember of the embryology of the ovaries. They descend from the fetal abdomen and the ovarian blood supply arises from the aorta. Therefore, it is not surprising that the para-aortic lymph nodes may be involved. Now let's do here a quick review. What are common gastrointestinal symptoms of women presenting with ovarian tumors? Constipation, abdominal or pelvic pain, and bloating. Part 3. What are the types and histologic appearance of ovarian tumors? The vast majority, or about 95% of ovarian malignancies, originate from the surface epithelium. The other 5% of ovarian cancers arrive from the sex cord stroma or germ cells. I'll review these by type of neoplasm. When diagnosing an ovarian tumor, remember that the age of a patient who presents with an ovarian mass is a helpful clinical guide to the etiology of the tumor. For instance, benign epithelial tumors are most commonly found in women of reproductive age. Epithelial ovarian tumors, both benign and malignant, are most often found in postmenopausal women. Finally, germ cell tumors are most commonly found in prepubertal girls, children, and adolescents. Let's first begin by discussing epithelial neoplasms. Surface epithelial tumors are the most common form of ovarian cancer, accounting for 70% of cases. They arise from the simple cuboidal cell layer that surrounds the ovaries and extends to the fallopian tubes. The cancer is closely associated with mutations in the TP53 gene. The most clearly identified hereditary form is associated with mutations in the breast cancer genes BRCA1 or BRCA2. What are these genes? Also called BRCA genes, BRCA1 and BRCA2 are genes that encode for DNA repair proteins. Mutations in these genes are associated with a higher risk of breast and ovarian cancers. The etiology for this risk increase is unknown, but the epidemiology suggests that the more times a woman has ovulated in her lifetime, the higher her risk. For instance, it's more common in women who have not had children than in women who have been pregnant multiple times and likely have ovulated fewer times in their lifetime. Similarly, women who have used oral contraceptive pills at any point in their lifetime have a decreased risk of these tumors because of fewer ovulatory cycles. Note that family history is also an important risk factor. A history of ovarian cancer in a mother or sister increases the incidence 4 to 5-fold. Now let's dig in a little bit deeper. The four categories within the surface epithelial tumors are serous, mucinous, clear cell, and endometrioid. Each has benign and malignant versions. First, serous tumors are the most common surface epithelial tumor. As you might imagine, they are filled with clear serum-like fluids that give them a cystic appearance. They can either be benign, low-grade, or malignant, high-grade. The benign tumor is called a serous cystoadenoma. These tumors are single or multiloculated cysts ranging 5 to 20 centimeters in size, and they are bilateral up to 25% of the time. In contrast, the malignant tumor is called a serous cystoadenocarcinoma. Serous cystoadenocarcinomas are the most common malignant ovarian tumors, representing 95% of all ovarian cancers. Serous cystoadenocarcinomas are associated with a mutation in P53, an important regulator of the cell cycle, that results in abnormal cell growth. What do these tumors look like on histology? These tumors present with a whorled collection of calcium called the seminoma body. To give you a better idea, imagine rolling up a tortilla and then cutting it into a cross-section. The layers in the roll look just like these seminoma bodies, with concentric layers upon layers of material. Next, let's focus on mucinous tumors, which are the second most common type of surface epithelial tumor. Mucinous tumors are filled with a thick fluid called mucin. Like serous tumors, they also tend to be multiloculated, meaning they look like they have multiple cavities within one tumor. Benign mucinous cystoadenomas can grow to enormous proportions filled with many liters of mucus. Mucinous tumors secrete carcinoembryonic antigen, CEA, which can be used as a tumor marker. Third, let's explore endometrioid tumors, which may be cystic or solid in appearance. Endometrioid tumors are histologically similar to endometrial tissue and they have a glandular appearance. One theory holds that these tumors arise from old endometrial implants, which is the growth of uterine lining outside of the uterus. However, endometriosis is not generally considered a precursor to endometrioid tumors. Finally, clear cell tumors are usually malignant surface epithelial ovarian tumors that may also arise from endometriosis. These tend to appear as large cystic masses averaging more than 15 centimeters in size. As the name may imply, these tumors are composed of layers of large cells with abundant clear cytoplasm. Let's do a quick review of what we just learned about the types of epithelial neoplasms. Which type of ovarian cancer displays somoma bodies on histology? Serous epithelial tumors show somoma bodies. To learn about sex cord stromal tumors, we'll look at tumors of the ovarian stroma, or the support structure. Within the stroma of the ovary are three important cell types: fibroblasts, theca cells, which convert cholesterol into androgens, and granulosa cells, which convert the androgens into estradiol. Fibromas and phecomas are rare, benign tumors that typically present as solitary masses that can cause pelvic pain or a pulling sensation in the groin. The main difference between the two is that the phecomas are hormonally active, producing estrogen, whereas fibromas are not. Fibromas may be part of Meigs syndrome, a type of paraneoplastic syndrome, or a cluster of associated disorders related to a type of cancer. This syndrome consists of benign ovarian tumor, ascites, or fluid in the abdomen, and pleural effusion, or fluid in the lung pleura. Meigs syndrome resolves on removal of the tumor. A granulosa cell tumor is a malignant stromal tumor and is best known for its ability to overproduce estrogen. Can you guess how these tumors may present? Because sex hormones are secreted, often these tumors present with abnormal bleeding from endometrial hyperplasia, tender breasts, or early puberty. It is also important to keep in mind that the secretion of these hormones can result in secondary carcinomas such as endometrial cancer. Granulosa cell tumors are also associated with elevated levels of inhibin, a peptide secreted by granulosa cells that plays a role in regulating pituitary secretion of follicle-stimulating hormone, or FSH. Although testicular cell types are not normally found in the ovary, Sertoli-lighted cell tumors do rarely occur in the ovary. These tumors are low-grade malignancies and are hormonally active like granulosa cell tumors. The difference is that they secrete testosterone, which can cause new and rapid virilization in females. Now let's see if you remember how to differentiate some sex cord stromal tumors. How do fibromas and phecomas differ? Phecomas produce estrogen, but fibromas do not. Let's now turn our attention to exploring germ cell tumors. The germ cell tumors are associated with the cells that make up the ovum and its supporting structures. The main germ cell tumors are important to know include teratomas, dysgerminomas, yolk sac tumors, and choriocarcinomas. Teratomas are the most common germ cell tumors. These are cystic and solid tumors that are usually benign but large. They are well known for having a range of undifferentiated and differentiated cells derived from the three embryonic layers, endoderm, mesoderm, and ectoderm. These tumors often contain tissues such as hair or teeth, which makes them easy to spot. A unique form of teratoma is a struma ovarii, which is a specialized teratoma that contains thyroid tissue, and it can present with hyperthyroidism. Dysgerminomas are malignant germ cell tumors that are most commonly present in adolescent patients. They originate from primordial germ cells that are destined to become gametes for sexual reproduction. These tumors are associated with an elevated serum lactate dehydrogenase, or LDH. Histologically, these cells can take on a fried egg appearance with round nuclei and abundant clear cytoplasm. Choriocarcinomas are very rare but highly malignant tumors made up of trophoblastic or placental tissue with the ability to produce human chorionic gonadotropin, or HCG. This is expected because this is a natural function of the placenta to maintain pregnancy. Often patients with this tumor have significantly elevated HCG levels on testing, an important clinical indicator. Ovarian choriocarcinoma arises from unfertilized germ cells and should not be confused with gestational choriocarcinoma, a malignant sequelae of a pregnancy, typically a molar pregnancy. Yolk sac tumors are rare malignant tumors derived from the cells that form the yolk sac of the embryo. Physiologically, the yolk sac is the first fetal organ to secrete the hormone alpha-fetoprotein, which is the equivalent of albumin for the fetus. This is clinically valuable because alpha-fetoprotein serves as a tumor marker for these patients. Yolk sac tumors are characterized histologically by the presence of Schiller-Duval bodies. Schiller-Duval bodies are blood vessels surrounded by tumor cells and hyalin, or pink matrix, deposits. Before moving on, let's do a pop quiz. What type of ovarian tumor may contain hair or teeth? Teratomas may contain hair or teeth. So far, we've talked about primary ovarian tumors, but there are also cancers that metastasize to the ovaries. The most common cancers that metastasize to the ovary include breast, colon, stomach, and skin, such as a melanoma. One of the most important metastatic ovarian tumors is a Krukenberg tumor, which most commonly metastasizes from gastric adenocarcinomas. Part 4. How do we diagnose ovarian tumors? Patients with ovarian cancer typically have few symptoms or they have non-specific GI symptoms like bloating or nausea. Ovarian masses often cannot be felt on pelvic exam until they are very large, especially in patients who are overweight. In instances where cancer has spread, patients may have ascites, enlarged lymph nodes, or fluid in the pleural cavity. For any patient with a suspected pelvic mass, a pelvic ultrasound is usually a good first test because ovarian tumors are often picked up in patients who undergo ultrasound for another reason. Ultrasound can detect ovarian tumors, but also ovarian cysts, tubal ovarian abscesses, and other pelvic pathology. A CT scan is useful to extend the examination to the surrounding abdomen and can also determine the degree of spread if cancer is present. Although the diagnosis may be suspected from the radiology studies, a tissue diagnosis is often needed. This may mean surgical removal of part or all of the ovary, called an oophorectomy. Needle biopsies are not commonly performed because of the possibility of seeding the peritoneal cavity with malignant or mucus-secreting cells. In reproductive age females, regular radiologic studies may be used instead of surgical exploration because many masses are from functional ovarian cysts and resolve without intervention. One of the key diagnostic tools we now use are tumor markers. Tumor markers are useful as a complement to tissue histology, but do not replace it. They are used for diagnosis and to follow up the response to therapy. Let's learn about the common tumor markers for ovarian cancer. Okay, first there is cancer antigen 125, or CA125, which is seen in malignant epithelial ovarian cancer. There are many false positives with this marker because it is also detected in cancers of the endometrium, pancreas, breast, lung, and colon. This means that it is also elevated in endometriosis, cirrhosis, peritonitis, pelvic inflammatory disease, and pancreatitis. This lack of specificity limits its use as a screening tool, but it is a useful marker for following up the disease after a firm diagnosis is made. Alpha-fetoprotein is a tumor marker produced by yolk sac tumors. Inhibin is secreted by mucinous epithelial and granulosa tumors, and this hormone reduces pituitary FSH secretion. Excess androgens are produced by granulosa tumors. And finally, estrogen and progesterone are produced by fecal cell tumors. Let's see what you remember about tumor markers. Why is CA125 limited as a screening tool for ovarian cancer? CA125 has many false positive results, making it not useful as a screening tool. Part 5. What is the treatment and prognosis of ovarian cancer? Treatment depends on the type of ovarian tumor. Stromal malignancies are low-grade and typically cured with surgery alone. Germ cell malignancies are highly chemosensitive, and even advanced disease has a very good cure rate, and often fertility can be spared. However, epithelial ovarian cancer is more challenging. It spreads by direct extension in the pelvis and throughout the peritoneum, and at diagnosis is more likely to be metastatic, involving organs in the peritoneal cavity and beyond. Most women with metastatic ovarian cancer have fluid in the peritoneal cavity. Epithelial ovarian cancer also spreads via lymphatic invasion, with the para-aortic lymph nodes often being involved. Treating most malignant ovarian cancers involves a combination of surgical removal of the affected ovary, any surrounding involved structures, and the involved lymph nodes. This might include the uterus or part of the GI tract. Surgery is the best way to determine the spread of the cancer and the staging of the cancer. Chemotherapy is also a part of treatment, given the highly malignant nature of most ovarian cancers. Overall, 5-year survival rates are poor, at about 50%. Patients with distant metastases have about 10% survival at 5 years. And that's it for ovarian tumors. Thanks for sticking with me. Let's see if we've completed our goals for this episode. First, can you name the most common types of ovarian tumors and classify their types? The three main ovarian tumor groups are categorized according to their cellular origin, which are surface epithelial, sex cord stromal, and germ cell. Surface epithelial tumors can be categorized into 4 groups: serous, clear cell, mucinous, and endometrioid. Sex cord stromal tumors derive from the support structures of the ovaries and include granulosa cell tumors, sarcomas, and fibromas. High-grade serous cystoadenocarcinoma is the most common ovarian malignancy and has the worst prognosis of ovarian cancers. Second, can you describe the clinical pathologic features of major types of ovarian tumors? Granulosa cell tumors secrete estrogen. Sarcomas are also hormonally active, but fibromas are not. Germ cell tumors are derived from germ cells, which are involved in embryologic development. And the main germ cell tumors are teratomas, dysgerminomas, yolk sac tumors, and choriocarcinomas. Finally, can you describe the diagnosis and treatment of ovarian tumors? Ovarian tumors most often present asymptomatically or with non-specific GI or pelvic symptoms. Pelvic ultrasound may suggest a diagnosis, but surgical excision and pathological examination of the ovary is necessary to confirm it. Tumors may secrete tumor markers, circulating hormones, or proteins that can be used for diagnosis or follow-up after treatment. Now that we've covered the basics of several types of ovarian tumors, let's revisit our patient from earlier in this episode. You are a second-year resident in the ER seeing HU, a 63-year-old woman admitted for abdominal pain. She has had 2 months of lower left quadrant pain along with nausea, bloating, and constipation. Her history reveals that she carries a BRCA1 mutation. Although your initial impression is a gastrointestinal source of pain, you perform a pelvic exam and feel an approximately 6 cm mass in the left ovary. What are your next steps in evaluation? How do you take into consideration her genetic history? Because you palpated a large mass on the left ovary during the pelvic exam, you now suspect an ovarian tumor. Your first step in evaluation is to order a transvaginal pelvic ultrasound, which reveals an 8 cm solid left ovarian mass. You consult a gynecologist who specializes in ovarian cancer. As you transition care to the gynecologist, you explain to the patient that epithelial ovarian tumors, both benign and malignant, are most often found in postmenopausal women such as her age group. The next steps would involve getting higher resolution imaging studies, such as a CT scan, to locate her tumor and see if there are any metastases. During your time with her, you also discuss the importance of the BRCA1 mutation, which she has. The BRCA1 gene encodes for DNA repair proteins, and mutations are associated with a higher risk of breast and ovarian cancers. The patient says, "Thank you for explaining all of that to me so that I can begin to understand what is happening." Your encounter and care for HU makes you appreciate the importance of pelvic exams and that ovarian tumors may present with gastrointestinal symptoms. This makes you appreciate that when a woman presents with GI complaints, it is important to include gynecologic causes in your differential diagnosis. And that's it for our show today. Make sure to like and subscribe. Your feedback continuously helps us to improve. You can get the full RxBricks experience online at www.usmle-rx.com, complete with illustrations, study questions, flashcards, and active learning. Happy studying, and see you next time.